It's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
We get it started on this Tuesday, and good to have you with us. A lot to do over the next 60 minutes. We'll be joined by Tom Brenneman of the CW. He calls ACC football there, called Reds games for years. His father, Marty Brenneman, was on the mic when Pete Rose broke Ty Cobb's record, became the all-time hit king. And Tom Brenneman has his own history with Pete Rose. We'll discuss that coming up in about 20 minutes. Something to consider today. We have some weekend leftovers, Tom Brady and Baker Mayfield style, the President's Cup. Yes, the President's Cup was this weekend. I bet you didn't know. Odds and ends, a whole bunch more, an MLB postseason preview. But we start things out in the NFL. Sam Yarnell is here. And Sam, a tale of a couple of different Monday night football games, as we had another Monday night football doubleheader last night. And of course, look, the Miami Dolphins are in a world of trouble right now. I saw somebody point this out, and I apologize that I don't remember who it was. Somebody pointed this out on social media today. And I know you're going to probably have some qualms with this because you're not a Tua guy. But, and I've said this for years about certain players, you know, Mike Trout. Guys that are MVPs or guys that are extremely valuable, you don't realize their value, not when they're on the field. You don't realize it then. You realize it when they're not on the field. And as much as people might want to bang on Tua and the road record and all this stuff, at least the Dolphins were viable with Tua Tagovailoa. They're not viable in any way, shape, or form right now without him on the field.
So, yeah, I hear you. But Snoop Huntley at the same time is a lot worse than we all remember him. Especially, like, it actually kind of goes back to something I said yesterday on the show. The Baltimore Ravens offense, when they're working so well, is truly like what Chris Collinsworth said on the Sunday night broadcast. They are like a service academy when their offense is firing on all cylinders, the way that they run the ball. Snoop Huntley thrived in that, and we saw him have a lot of success in that. The Miami Dolphins offense is completely different than that. It's based around a lot of motion. There's a lot of speed in that offense, and it's not, frankly, designed for a running quarterback like Tyler Huntley. It's designed for a more stationary quarterback to try and protect him, especially after what Tua Tagovailoa has proven that he needs late in his career.
He's not that late.
I would think that he is probably at this point pretty late in his career. But, you know, I take you back to 2022, and we know the success that this Mike McDaniel offense can have without Tua in it. He's proven that as they were a game under 500 when Tua was out,
or two games under 500. It's not successful. That's barely treading water.
Sure, but when you're thrown into a backup quarterback halfway through the season, that's about all you're asked to do.
Sam, they look lost without him last night. I mean, some of those calls on fourth down last night where they didn't even have any chance to pick up first downs. I mean, this looks like a bad football team right now. And I mean, and look, you're talking at least two more games before you get him back. You're 1-3. You're going to be probably 1-5. By the time you see him again, at the earliest, maybe 1-6. You almost wonder at this point, do you just pack it in if you're the Dolphins and throw away the season?
Yeah, they looked like the worst team in football last night, and they probably are right now. A huge piece of that, though, is they cannot run the football to save their lives.
No, they cannot.
Devon Achane averaged 1.5 yards per carry yesterday. That's not sustainable in any offense. Like I said, not built around the success of a quarterback like Tyler Huntley. If they do want to at least tread water, they're going to have to go out and get someone who's better tailored, especially with the loss of Skylar Thompson, a guy we've seen have somewhat success, at least in his rookie year out of K-State, in that Miami Dolphins offense with all the superstars around it. You know, there are so many people that came on.
I just don't know where you're going. Not you, per se. I'm saying I don't know where you're going.
There are so many people that came on and social media and stuff right after the game, and they're like, what are we doing? Like, trade Tyreek Hill back to Kansas City. Get rid of Jalen Waddle. What are we talking about,
people? Matthew Berry.
It is the most foolish thing that I've ever heard for the reaction of Miami Dolphins fans after one game or perhaps one lost season. Listen, even if you do tank this season, it is a quarterback-rich NFL draft this year, and that is an offensive system that, again, is designed to have a very talented quarterback come into it and have massive amounts of success.
All right.
So I'm not worried about the Dolphins at all.
I'm sure they're worried in Miami, but let's talk about obviously what happened last night in Detroit. Lions and Seahawks. Can we just have Lions and Seahawks for 17 games every year? I'd sign up for that. I mean, my God. Yeah, give me overs every time. Lots of points. Why are you making faces like somebody just urinated in your Wheaties? They're exciting football games. There's no getting around that.
I'm never, ever, 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 ever going to ask for 17 weeks of Geno Smith.
Why? They're great games.
The quarterback of my team.
They're great games. Talking about the games.
The great thing about that game last night is we went into it expecting an NFL game, and a college football game broke out in the middle of it. Yeah. It was truly impressive to see what the quarterbacks combined for. Gosh, darn near 700 passing yards in that game.
Jared Goff, perfect. I mean, my God. I mean,
And some of the fun plays too, like the David Montgomery bubble screen pass where he runs through half the team, goes full Marshawn Lynch on the Seattle Seahawks defense. You're right. It was a very fun game to watch. The circus catch from Amon-Ra St. Brown for the touchdown. It was a very fun game to watch. Don't get me wrong. Again, I'm never going to ask for 17 weeks of Geno Smith, whether it's for my team or just watching him. And we cashed on that bet for Geno to throw a pick late in that game. But hey, you're right, Jason. It was a very good game and maybe the most fun play of the season to date with the Amon-Ra pass to Jared Goff.
And by the way, can I also go back just for 1 second to that Titans-Dolphins game and just say this? It once again goes to show. Mason Rudolph's not going to tear up the town. Mason Rudolph's never going to be confused for any of the great quarterbacks that have played the game. But it goes to show that just with a little bit of confidence and professionalism at the quarterback position, you can find ways to win games. That Titans defense, obviously, a big part of that as well. All right, stick around. We got more to do on the show. I've got something to say as it relates to Pete Rose and Dikembe Mutombo's passing. We'll get to that next. Tom Brenneman will join us as well. Sam comes back later in the show. We welcome you back to Sports Wrap on this Tuesday. Tom Brenneman will join us coming up in 10 minutes. Help us remember the life of Pete Rose, who passed away on Monday at the age of 83. Sam Yarnell will rejoin us a little later on. We'll do a baseball playoff preview with him as the playoffs get started on Tuesday. Mets and Braves both getting in on Monday, splitting a doubleheader. Something to consider. We'll have some weekend leftovers there. But I want to start with something that took place yesterday, and we just kind of alluded to it with Tom Brenneman joining us in 10 minutes to talk about the passing of Pete Rose, and that is the passing of Dikembe Mutombo at the age of 58 on Monday, and Pete Rose, who passed away as well at the age of 83. Two very different men. Two very different legacies. One remembered for what he did as much in his post-career as what he did during his playing career, if not more so, really, in Dikembe Mutombo. His philanthropy, his generosity, his willingness to help with an important cause and all causes that were near and dear to his heart. A personality, this effervescent personality that made basketball so much fun. His role in the game so enjoyable to watch. a guy that didn't have the ego of so many of today's superstars and so many of today's big men. We play in a different time, in a different world. And it's the reason why you don't see anybody else on the screen with me. The passings of these two men both impacted me profoundly because they're part of two different generations that I grew up watching, the tail end of Pete Rose, where I was very young, and Dikembe Mutombo, who was, you know, when I was bringing, when my joy and love for sports really took hold, Dikembe Mutombo was a huge part of that. So to see him gone at such a young age, to lose somebody like this at such a young age, at 58, with so much life left to live, as a result of brain cancer, was something that it was emotional for me yesterday, because my high school years, my late high school years, when I started to think, hey, I might want to talk about sports for a living, those were years where we were talking about Dikembe Mutombo playing for the Denver Nuggets, upsetting the Seattle Supersonics at the time. Rest in peace, Supersonics. So, all the best to everybody close to Dikembe Mutombo, and positive thoughts for him. Rest in peace. This one's a little bit more difficult for me because it's a very complicated subject. Pete Rose, who you can see here with me in 2014, was somebody I got to sit down with. So it's a bit more personal for me. I only spent 30 minutes of an entire life that the guy spent on this planet with him. But that 30 minutes talking baseball with Pete Rose in 2014 when I was with NBC Sports Radio meant the world to me as somebody who grew up playing baseball, wanted to play baseball, talked about it for a living. Having the opportunity to pick Pete Rose's brain in 2014 while he was on a book tour meant the world to me. And sadly, this is about the only thing I have remaining from that interview, because the ball that I had had him autographed that day. My dog chewed it up. And the interview was on an external hard drive that I think got corrupted. Pete Rose was not a perfect man. By his own admission, and by anybody you could find that wanted to try and tear him down in his post playing and managerial career. I fervently believe that Pete Rose belongs in the Hall of Fame. And it saddens me that he went to his final place of rest, or will go to his final place of rest, having not enjoyed that one day that he so badly wanted, so badly needed to validate everything he had done in the game. People who watch the game know the greatness of Pete Rose. He's the all-time hit leader. People that watched baseball know his significance in the game. And as much as Pete was willing to talk about his own significance in the game, the one thing he wanted more than anything was the one thing Major League Baseball and the writers could deny him, and that was entry into Cooperstown. And you don't have a Hall of Fame. You don't have a legitimate Hall of Fame without the likes of a Pete Rose, who belongs there. And I want to say something in the hours after his passing that I think is, some people will agree with it, some people will disagree with it. Rob Manfred, the powers that be at the Hall of Fame, the writers who wanted to keep him out so badly, don't you dare go and put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame posthumously. As much of a black mark as it was on him to have bet on baseball, to have bet on his own team, he should be able to wear as a badge of honor wherever he is laid to rest the fact that he didn't get in. He should be able to wear it as a badge of honor. Because that guy belonged in the Hall of Fame. That guy deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. And my only hope is that some way, somehow, Major League Baseball learns its lesson from the Pete Rose decision to not put guys like him in the Hall of Fame. And one day Barry Bonds winds up in there, and Alex Rodriguez and Roger Clemens and all these guys from the PED era who are being kept out because of foolish pride, because of ego, hubris. Rest in peace, Pete Rose. We're coming back with Tom Brenneman. He will lend his thoughts next. We welcome you back to this Tuesday edition of the program. You heard me have my say on the passing of Pete Rose, also the passing of Dikembe Mutombo on Monday, the news coming down. I wanted to bring in Tom Brenneman, who's known Pete Rose for a long time. His father, Marty, called the games for the Reds when Pete was still playing, was on the mic for the famous call when he broke Ty Cobb's record and became the hit king. And Tom Brenneman got to meet him over the years, obviously, through that relationship as well. And Tom Brenneman, who does a great job on the ACC football broadcasts with CW, joins us on the show. What was your reaction? What was your immediate reaction when you heard of Pete Rose's passing, Tom?
Well, Jason, thanks for having me on again. Nice to see you. I hope everything's well. You know, somebody said to me last night, there were a lot of things that you might have expected from Pete Rose. And you can fill in the blank on any of them across the board from one end of the spectrum to the other. As you know, you've been around him, you spent time with him, you talked baseball with him. One thing you never expected from Pete Rose, Jason, was that he was going to die. You know, here in Cincinnati, you know, I don't know if there's ever been an athlete that is more bound or related to his city more than Pete Rose was in Cincinnati. Born and raised west side of town, tough part of town, grew up with his mom and dad, just tough, you know, athletic, driven people. And overachiever for the talent that he was given. He embodied so many great things about this great city. And for so many here, I think I speak for a lot of them. I don't want to speak for all of them. You just can't believe he's gone. You just felt like Pete Rose would live forever. Good, bad, or indifferent.
Right.
How you felt about it. But felt like he'd live forever.
Yeah, I said this in the last segment. We often use the term rest in peace. And I don't even know if in death this man will rest in peace, because till his dying day, he was fighting the battle to try and convince people that he belonged in the Hall of Fame. It meant so much to him, Tom.
Yeah.
We hear so many athletes today say, well, I don't care if I get in. You know, these guys that have been snubbed for whatever reason. I don't care if I get in. It meant so much to him. And his existence revolved around it just so much.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Jason. When I was announcing the Cubs games back in the early 1990s, and my partner, who became like a second father to me, the late, great Ron Santo. Mm-hmm. This was a guy that should have been in the Hall of Fame, you know, maybe not, you know, after 5 years necessarily. You can make that argument. You can make the argument he could have been after 5 years. But the bottom line is he went 10 years and 20 years and 30 years and 40 years. And every year that Hall of Fame announcement would be made, and media would be camped in front of his house in either Chicago or Arizona, where he's living at the time. Near the end, he had lost both of his legs because diabetes. I only bring this up because I saw exactly what you're talking about, about how much it meant to someone to be in the Hall of Fame, and they weren't afraid to admit it. Ron Santo wanted to be in the Hall of Fame more than anything in the world. And then he died, and they put him in 2 years later. And look, for his wife, Vicky, who gave the induction speech, and for his kids, whom I'm really good friends with all of them, and his grandkids, it meant the world to them, but not nearly what it had meant to him. And with Pete's case, it was a twofold part. Yes, he very much wanted to be in the Hall of Fame, but he would share with me regularly, and I talked to him regularly through these many, many years. The thing that I think meant as much to him was getting a chance to be back in baseball again, because I don't think there's ever been anybody over the last 83 years during his lifespan, Jason, that loved baseball more than Pete Rose did. As you know, I mean, he loved baseball. He loved working with young players. He loved being around players. And
I loved watching him. I loved watching him on the Fox broadcasts, breaking down baseball, talking about hitting. You want to watch some great videos, and they're all over YouTube. Go watch the videos of him sitting there with Alex Rodriguez and Frank Thomas, two guys that one's in the Hall, the other should be in their own right, and talking about hitting and moving up in the batter's box and moving back in the batter's box and changing your grip on the bat and all this stuff. And I'm just like, I'm mesmerized watching this.
Yeah, and he loved sharing that kind of stuff with young players and wanted to do it again. And I think that's where he was extremely naive and in that he was going to get back in the game. I think you could certainly make the case, whether you like him or don't like him, was he perfect? Absolutely not. No question, nor is anyone else for that matter, though many judge to be. But you can make the case that as Pete Rose, the player, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame because the gambling accusations and proven to be true did not come about until he was managing baseball. So Pete Rose, the player, should be in the Hall of Fame. But him clinging to this idea that both of those things would happen, going in the Hall of Fame and being able to work with players again and put on a uniform again, that was never going to happen.
I only have time for one more because of the restrictions of TV, which drives me nuts. But I said this in the last segment, and I'll say it again. Don't dare put him in posthumously. I think it would be the biggest slap in the face to put him in posthumously and not allow him to have had that day, that one day that would have meant so much to him. It gets me emotional talking about it because they could have at any point stopped this madness, this nonsense of not putting him in, Tom. I don't dare put him in now because I don't want to see it.
The only thing, I hear what you're saying, and I know what you're saying. The only thing I would say to that is having seen, going back to the Santo thing again, having seen how much it meant to his kids and his wife and his grandkids. I think the same thing. I grew up with Pete Jr. and his sister, Fawn, and he's had two other children since then, whom I don't know, but his first two children with his first wife, Carol, it would mean the world to them. And so, you know, and I think it would certainly mean the world to a lot of people in the baseball world who knew him and just loved being around him because his energy and his humor and he was one of a kind. There's no question. In multiple ways.
Yeah. Tom Brenneman, I appreciate it. We got to get you on and talk college football one of these days. That wild ACC.
Does anybody want to win besides Miami?
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Be well.
All right, buddy. Have a good day.
We're coming back with more Sports Wrap on a Tuesday. Don't go anywhere. Something to consider coming up in about 10 minutes. Some weekend leftovers, because who doesn't like leftovers? Let's talk some baseball. Postseason getting underway on Tuesday. Wild card matchups. Yankees, Dodgers, Guardians. Who else? I'm missing one. All sitting around waiting. to play Phillies. There you go. All sitting around waiting to play postseason games and trying to keep themselves sharp. We'll see if what happened last year, Sam, carries over to this year. It was only a one-year sample, but everybody lost their minds when the favorites got bounced after essentially having to sit and you know, sit on ice for a week before playing their postseason games. We'll see if that translates into anything again this season, in this postseason. But it's time to handicap it. It's time to preview this postseason that obviously has so many people excited. The Mets and Braves playing their way in yesterday in what had to be one of the most bizarre situations we've seen. Day after the regular season is officially over, you've got this doubleheader matchup between the two teams because Major League Baseball screwed the pooch when it came to scheduling around Hurricane Helene. Mets win game one. Can't celebrate, though. Major League Baseball said, no celebrations. Then the Braves win game two. Diamondbacks the odd man out in that three-way. And you've got the Mets and Braves making it in as wild card teams. Mets get the Brewers. The Braves get the Padres as the wild card round begins on Tuesday. So, Sam Yarnell, what are some of the picks you like as we handicap this postseason?
All right, Jason, the best pick, my main play, my nuclear missile whale play on this MLB postseason is just one bet. We're keeping it as simple as we possibly can. The National League to win the World Series. Line shop. I found it as friendly as minus 120 this morning. I've seen it as high as minus 140 at some shops also this morning. And I love this bet. I think that the National League is hands and feet above this American League this year. The pitching is there on all sides, whereas when you look at all of the American League contenders, there are massive question marks in every single pitching department, and the hitting will make up, right? The American League might have Aaron Judge, but the National League has Shohei Ohtani. I really do think the National League is a lot better than the American League this year, so I will lay the minus 120 on the National League to win the World Series. That is my large play, and really my only main play for this MLB postseason when we're talking about futures. There is an interesting market I did find at one sports book, which is team to advance further. Their playoff specials. I like it. And an interesting number that I found is the Milwaukee Brewers, who we talked about on this show with David Ardsma frequently, and how they're poised for a deep postseason run and a lot of success in this postseason. I like the Milwaukee Brewers to advance farther than the New York Yankees at 5-1. I think that the price is right there. And I think the Yankees, again, Jason just mentioned it, these teams coming off of a bye, they historically have struggled massively. The Yankees, with all the questions that Jason and I have talked about for so long around pitching, especially that bullpen and closing out games, that is what wins and loses rounds in the postseason. So give me the Milwaukee Brewers and that excellent pitching staff to advance further
outrun
the New York Yankees at 5-1. Those are my two main plays going into the MLB postseason. Other than that, I'll play it game by game here and there for games that are really exciting. Maybe a prop. I like Scoobles, K props whenever he's pitching. The show will air after he pitches, but you know, that kind of thing. I don't think that the MLB postseason is one where bettors can throw a massive futures card out and hope to reap in multiple benefits here and there.
I'll give you one. And just because the price is right and they're playing the best baseball going in, and baseball is about getting hot. I mean, the Diamondbacks came within a game or two last year of winning a World Series. People forget how bad the Diamondbacks were up until the final, you know, couple of months of the season last year. How do you not lay some money on the Detroit Tigers? They're 30-1. I mean, and rightfully so. I mean, of all the teams that are in this postseason, why would you? But and they've got a guy that they're going to be able to throw out there in Tarik Skubal, who's got a really good chance to win every time you put him on the mound. I'd take him at 30-1. I'll take the Tigers at 30-1, Sam.
I love it. I think it's a great bet. I'm with you. I think the Tigers, and you know, on top of like all the smarts that we talk about with betting and wanting to get the right line, it's a good story. It's one that you would like to root for.
Yep.
And that's always an added bonus when we're talking about betting on these kinds of things. One thing I'll say, Jason, that I actually came across my desk like yesterday or over the weekend. It must have been Sunday, actually. And it was the most underrated narrative in Major League Baseball to me this entire season. Tarik Skubal won the American League Triple Crown for pitching.
Wow.
We never talked about that.
Nope.
Tarik Skubal won the American League Triple Crown for pitching. He is a lock, and the Prince of Picks gave it out before the season. He is now a lock to win the American League Cy Young Award. Hope you tailed 10-1. My gosh, he has been one of the best pitchers in baseball, and it feels like we never talked about him ever.
No, because he was playing on the Tigers, who up until the last 7 weeks of the season were irrelevant in every conversation we had about baseball. Plus, chicks dig the long ball. So we talk about hitters more than we talk about pitchers. It's like we talk about offense more than we talk about defense in the NFL. You know, we tend to focus more on the glitz and the glamour of offense. Give me Yankees-Dodgers in the World Series, because if you want to root for something, root for that, because it's the World Series everybody wants to watch. All right, something to consider, Sam Yarnell. That is right around the corner. Odds and Ends wraps up the show in 10 minutes. The end for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I want you to see something. We'll get to that coming up. Plus, we'll tie it together with anything we missed throughout the show. All right, Sam Yarnell. Something to consider on this Tuesday for your consideration. I give you Tom Brady sniping at Baker Mayfield, because why not? Always fun to, we knew Tom Brady said when he took this role with Fox Sports, he said he was not going to be shy about settling some scores. People may not remember this, but a couple of years ago, he made it very clear that he wasn't going to have any issues with taking guys to task. He wasn't going to sugarcoat anything. And that's kind of what you're getting from him already in the booth. Case in point, on Sunday, you had Baker Mayfield make some comments. People could see it on the screen. On a podcast recently, he was asked about the difference in the locker room between, you know, Tom Brady being there and him being there. Baker Mayfield said, quote, "They wanted me to come in, be myself, bring the joy back to football for guys who weren't having as much fun." And he talked about the stress that and tension that could exist in the locker room because of the type of player and personality that Tom Brady was, especially at that stage of his career. Well, Tom Brady wasn't very thrilled when he caught wind of this. Kevin Burkhardt asked him about it on the broadcast. Listen and watch for yourself.
Guy here said, quote, "They wanted me to come in, be myself, bring the joy back to football for guys who weren't having as much fun." Funny, because you've made this environment for me very stressful up here in the booth, so I understand where he's coming from.
Do you feel it?
No.
Feel the stress? No. Well, I was going to say, I thought stressful was not having Super Bowl rings. So there was a mindset of a champion that I took to work every day. This wasn't daycare. If I wanted to have fun, I was going to go to Disneyland with my kids.
Yeah, so, you know, as you were saying, go ahead. That's you feel like, I feel like there's more in there to say.
There's a way to approach this game.
Yeah.
And it's that with the right mindset and try to push each other outside of our comfort zone. And great teammates do that. You come in, I have someone like Gronkowski, I have someone like Evans. There's high expectations for us. We got to make sure we go out there and deliver.
The competitive juice is still flowing.
It's still in there.
I love it.
No apologies.
Okay, so let me take this from a couple angles. One, Tom Brady's petty, he always has been. Two, I don't think Baker Mayfield meant it as an insult. I really don't. I think he was just giving an honest assessment of the difference between life with Tom Brady there, which he wasn't part of. All he's getting it from is secondhand, which means he's hearing from players directly that are saying, this is what it was like with Tom Brady, and here's what it's like with you, and here's the difference. That's one. Two, you know, it gets old, this whole thing of, I know for Tom Brady it doesn't, because I'm sure he sits there every night and polishes all his championship rings and all that stuff. And it's great. If that's what gets you through life, Tom Brady, knock yourself out. But at the same time, not everybody does have their life revolve around winning a championship. To Baker Mayfield, I guarantee you, he is not losing any sleep at night over the fact that he doesn't have a Super Bowl. And that's not a bad thing. Not everybody obsesses to a degree. And that is sometimes what makes for great athletes. It sometimes makes them interesting people to cover. But it's what separates a Michael Jordan from, you know, some guys that play in the league. It's what separates a Wayne Gretzky, who played the game and obsessed on that level. That may not be Baker Mayfield's style. And there's more than one way, Sam. I'll finish with this. There's more than one way to win championships. Tom Brady making it sound like the only way you could be a Super Bowl winner is the TB12 way is asinine. There's been guys that have played the game that have had fun doing it. Brett Favre, forever, whatever you want to think of Brett Favre, Brett Favre was having fun out there every single game. And he still won a Super Bowl. So, I mean, this idea that you got to be a certain way and a certain mentality, and that's the only way you can win a championship. Poof.
God, I got to preface all this with the fact that it pains me. Like, it truly hurts my heart that I am about to have to stand up for Tom Brady, the man who single-handedly ruined the first 17 years of my life watching football. Shout out to Josh Allen. Tom Brady saying this, to me, just proves what it takes to be the best in the world at something. First of all, I think that the notion that any professional football player, any player in the NFL, wakes up in the morning and doesn't want to go win a championship, and it doesn't eat away at them if they've been in the league for 7 years and haven't won a championship yet, especially if they've been through six different teams. I think that professional athletes are born to try and win championships. What makes them professional athletes instead of amateur athletes?
So
it's what gets them to the professional level.
You're telling me hold on a second. You're telling me there aren't guys that aren't in it mostly for the paycheck? Like they really that they're losing sleep at night when they're sitting on $100 million? You're out of your mind. I'm going to say this. I'm not throwing the age card at you when I say this. You are a lot younger. When you're around these guys more and talk to them more, you suddenly start to realize some of them are in it just for the paycheck. They don't care about winning championships. They just don't.
Their legacy is how people are remembered. And most of those guys who get those big paychecks get them because they already won something.
Some guys just don't care. That's my only point. We're coming back. All right, just about time to wrap up this baby for a Tuesday. Wednesday means contender pretender. All of that for you on tomorrow's show. Recap of all the wild card playoff action. Talk about that too. If you miss anything from Sports Wrap, make sure to go check out the podcast available on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Odyssey, Amazon, you name it. We're on all of them. All right, Sam Yarnell, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. Can we just say, how about the end of the President's Cup? I mean, the U.S. has won it 10 times in a row. The last time the European team won it, Tiger Woods was a rookie, and it was 1998, and you were like, oh, wait, not even born yet. I mean, come on. Do we need the President's Cup anymore? We know the U.S. is good at beating everybody in golf except the Europeans. So let's just do away with the President's Cup at this point.
Jason mentioned contender pretender on the show tomorrow. Spoiler alert right now, his first pretender, the Buffalo Bills. Why? Because he just likes to mess with anything that I like. The President's Cup. This was fun.
You are jaded and cynical. Never mind. We now know you are jaded and cynical. I'm very happy.
This was fun for those of us American golf fans. A clean sweep on day one was something I did not have in my cards. Listen, we all thought that the U.S. was going to win. They came in, I believe, as massive, massive favorites. And then they swept it on day one, and it was basically all over. The internationals tried to make a comeback on Saturday. That was pretty fun and also pretty short-lived. But the thing about this tournament and the reason that I do truly think that it's so good for golf is you see these players playing team golf, which is always more fun. And I think in 2024, team golf had a really strong comeback in the golf community, and there was a real rallying around team golf. The amount that we see these players talking to each other and being more humane than they are when they're playing on the PGA Tour or on the European Tour, not necessarily. They're just joking around more. They're talking to each other more, chirping at each other more.
There's some cattiness. There's some cattiness out there. There's some guys that don't like each other.
It's a lot more fun to see. It's better viewing. It's better golf for viewership.
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I think the one thing we're realizing is a lot of these guys don't like each other all that much. If you're wondering what I'm talking about, go check out the Wyndham Clark stuff. Just go Google Wyndham Clark President's Cup. You'll find a whole bunch of fun stuff there. There's some very unlikable characters in the game of golf. There's some likable ones. There's some really unlikable ones. And it used to be this sport that was so buttoned up. And it used to be this sport where there was etiquette and there was class and sportsmanship and all those things. That stuff's all out the window, man. It is a whole new world in golf. And you know what? I'm here for it. Odds and ends, the end for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I gotta say this. A video came across my X feed yesterday, courtesy of 12 News in Phoenix, I believe. And they had video. It was just B-roll that they had a cameraman in there as the players were packing their boxes after the doubleheader split between the Mets and the Braves, Sam. And I thought it was interesting to watch Torrey Lovello go around the locker room and giving guys hugs and guys hugging each other because they're about to say goodbye. Remember, these guys, it's like family. You spend, 8 months out of the year with these guys, side by side. And I've worked in minor league baseball and traveled with teams, and there is a camaraderie. There is a brotherhood to it. And you think about a 162-game season, Sam, and you get three teams that finish in a tie for the last wild card spot, the last two wild card spots, the Mets, Braves, and Diamondbacks. And I know there's going to be some people that say, well, they should have tiebreakers and play against each other, because there used to be that. Now baseball's like, hey, we ain't got enough time. So we got to have, these different types of tiebreakers that sort of settle things. But in a 162-game season, if you can't manage to distinguish yourself by one game over everybody else, and I know crazy stuff happens in the course of a baseball season, sorry, you don't deserve to get in. So I feel bad for the Diamondbacks, but sorry, you didn't deserve to get in.
Yeah, you said it perfectly. I mean, they're victims of what is the new playoff system, right? If we're going to let in these three playoff teams, Jason, this is what's going to happen. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a very good part of this. And what is that? It's that up until the very last day of the season, we played competitive baseball games that actually meant something. And you had teams leaving it all out there on the field. That is good. And you're not going to get these, September 28th minor league games in the major league level. But at the same time, you're always going to have an Arizona Diamondbacks going forward.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In a 162-game season with so many teams, you are going to wind up with that. Yes.
It's the nature of letting six teams into the playoffs. Yep. The way that the schedule works out, there is always, always, always going to be a seventh team that is right outside of contention. There may not be an eighth, and like we're seeing this year, the drop-off to the next team in the Cubs, who fell out of contention a week and a half ago, is what, six games? Like, it is very fine margins, but when we get down to the end of the season, there's always going to be this black sheep seventh team.
WNBA postseason tonight, semifinals for the WNBA playoffs. You've got the Aces and the Liberty. Liberty -4. I like the Aces. I think they get a split in New York, get the series back to Las Vegas tied at 1. And I like the Lynx tonight, -4.5. Sun stole game 1 in Minneapolis. Thoughts real quick.
Aces and Sun, lock it in.
There you go. Wow. Picking the Sun. I like it.
Give me the dogs on the money line.
We'll see y'all back here tomorrow. Thanks to Tom Brenneman. Good stuff.